This is The Guardian.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Brought to you by Lexus. Some things do more than their stated functions, because exceptional things inspire you to do exceptional things. To this select list, we add the all-new Lexus GX. With its exceptional capability, you'll see possibilities you never knew existed, sending you far outside your comfort zone. But as much as the GX challenges you, it also spoils you. Its intuitive technology and luxurious features mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to it. The all-new Lexus GX.
Hi Pod fans, Max here. Just to say that today's Guardian Football Weekly is an EFL pod with a bit of Community Shield. The Guardian Women's Football Weekly will be dropped onto this feed, and that will of course look back on England's faultless, seamless victory over Nigeria in the last 16 of the Women's World Cup. I hope you enjoy this one. Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. The EFL is back and we're going to do our preview pod of the season after one game, forcing our panel to rip up the previews they did last week and base the next 45 games on what happened this weekend. So whoever manages Watford will take them back to the Premier League. Barnsley will score 322 goals this season, poor Port Vale. Cambridge will win the playoffs and Wrexham and Notts County are going down or something like that. And just to be completely clear, if we don't mention your club, it's because we have a deep-seated agenda against them and not because we have an hour to discuss all of this and the Community Shield. Arsenal win that on penalties. They definitely cared. But does anyone else? We'll credit Aaron Ramsdale both for his performance and for that article he wrote the other day. We'll talk injury time, take your questions, celebrity neighbours, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today from Not the Top 20 podcast, George Ellick. Hello.
Hello, Max.
We'll get on to
you have bragging
terrible
rights
weekend. Yes, I do, and it's very rare actually that bragging. I've always found bragging rights the most ridiculous phrase in football, as if you know we're all turning up together at the office. But for the first time in a long time, I do, and I'll save that for the League One part. Ben Fisher, welcome.
Hi, Max.
And Sunny Rudravadjula, hello, mate.
Hello, Max.
You dropped a bombshell just before recording, and we'll get to that at the end of the pod. Thomas says, Barry's still in pre-season training, not ready for 90 minutes. Absolutely correct. We cryogenically freeze Barry every summer, and he's just thawing for Wednesday. Let's start with the Championship then. What, Ben, for you was the standout of the day?
Well, I don't know. I mean, obviously, it was spread across 3 days, so we had a full weekend bonanza. I mean, Sunday was pretty packed. Obviously, started. I was at Leicester, Coventry, midday kickoff, sort of lesser spotted midday kickoff on a Sunday.
You sound unhappy about that.
Well, no, I quite liked it actually. You know, early start, early finish, and all that. No,
it's because it's the M69 derby, isn't it?
It is. There were some very sort of crass signs on the M69 itself en route. So, always good to see. Leicester, I thought, were pretty lucky, to be honest, to get the win, obviously, which they wanted. I was really impressed with Coventry, has to be said. Obviously, playoff finalists in May. Thought they played some really good stuff. And Gustavo Hama, just brilliant again. I mean, Maresca, after sort of singled him out, and I think he said he was maybe the best player in the division. I don't know if he's about to make a move for him or maybe just really likes him. But no, Coventry were really good. And I think that it was a really good game, actually, because I was at... I took a sort of busman's holiday to Bristol City Preston on Saturday, which was not a very good game at all. So it was quite refreshing that Leicester Coventry served up a bit of a treat. And then obviously we had Leeds Cardiff as well, which was good. One of the sort of standout things for me, Max, I suppose, was Archie Gray, 17, making his full debut for Leeds, carrying on the Gray dynasty up at Elland Road, son of Andy. Obviously, Eddie managed for the club, played for the club. And he was really impressive. I mean, for a teenager, there's this clip of him after Leeds score 95th minute equaliser. And Archie Gray, 17, is pushing you know, experienced players back on the pitch, and we can still do
nothing
it.
Nothing silly next five.
Yeah. I mean, nothing silly next five in stoppage time now kind of means a whole new thing, doesn't it? But it was, some good moments, but Archie Gray definitely maybe one of the pick of the weekend.
George, of those teams that have gone down then, Leicester, Leeds, Southampton, and a lot of the questions around Leicester and Southampton are, you know, will this squad still be there come the end of the window? Who having watched one game and given what they've done over the summer, do you think has the best shot?
Well, I mean, before the opening weekend in our 1-24s, we had Leeds winning the league. And part of the reason for that is because even though they may not have the star quality of the likes of Maddison and Barnes, who've obviously already moved on, Ward-Prowse, who is still at Southampton, albeit how long, we don't know, Lavia, you know, the profile of the best Leeds players, the likes of Somerville, Nonto, Sinisterra, they're probably just that level below, where actually a season in the Championship might be the best thing for their career and their development. And even though Leeds were the only team to drop points, you saw in flashes, I mean, Nonto was looking seriously lively. I think he'll have a great season in the second tier if he stays there. So it all kind of depends on who, you know, especially with Southampton, they managed to retain. You know, when the team came out on Friday night for their game against Sheffield Wednesday, it's a total joke of a first 11, to be honest, at second tier level. The players like Walker Peters, James Ward-Prowse, who are being regularly selected for England squads recently, you know, there still is the assumption, I think, within most parts of the Southampton fan base that they will move on. But at this stage, they're still there. And they put in a really good performance against Wednesday, completing the most passes in Championship history in the first half, which I thought was a nice niche stat to come away from. Leicester have lost, you know, Barnes and Maddison. They brought in players like Winks and Cody. You know, I personally am not a massive fan of Premier League relegated clubs going out and getting kind of struggling top tier players on big wages and big money. It isn't really a blueprint that necessarily always works, but in Enzo Maresca, they've got a coach who clearly has a very clear, you know, style of play. He's worked under Pep Guardiola, he's worked under Jorge Sampaoli, he's best mates with Roberto De Zerbi. So, you know, if you can get managerial genius through osmosis, then he'll be absolutely fine. But whether or not we'll see that come to fruit in their performances, we'll see. So it's early, is what I'm trying to say. I think we'll know much more when we see what the squads are like at the end of the month. But all three sides coming down looking to play certainly very possession-based and expansive stuff, and none of them keeping a clean sheet, but two of them getting a win.
And actually, Sandy, Southampton in that first half, and they were sort of taking the piss, weren't they? And it was just like, it was sort of like watching Brazil in a pre-season friendly. And then to actually not win it comfortably, I don't know if it's a worry, but I was sort of surprised. I actually went to bed at half time because I'm just generally exhausted. But I was like, well, they're going to absolutely smash this game.
Yeah, I love how you've brought up a Brazil comparison for the EFL already. That's the sort of commitment you want, and that, you know, sort of passion.
I did actually at one point at the Abbey try to start the chant of "It's just like watching Brazil," when I think we completed about four passes, which is very rare for Cambridge. Oxford do keep the ball quite well, but I was in the prawn sandwich box. So
that's never going to go down well, is it?
Exactly. Anyway, sorry.
But you're right, and it's one of those where you see that first half and you think, you know, Premier League players, parachute money, all that, they're just going to run away with it. But this is what the EFL does to you, especially now with the extra long matches, which I'm sure we'll get onto. You know, it becomes a bit of a leveller. And, you know, Wednesday are going to need that home support to kind of push them through. Obviously, their players aren't anywhere near as good as Southampton's. But this is why the EFL's, you know, so exciting, you know, and it's not quite the same as the Premier League, where Vieira gets sacked with Palace 12th and they haven't won in like months and months and months. So actually there's a load of teams that are not very good. There are a load of teams here that are all kind of at the same level, but half decent, if that makes sense. So I quite enjoyed it, and it was quite nice to see Wednesday get back into it, I guess, even though the whole situation around sacking Darren Moore was, in my opinion, a bit of a mess. But I can't see anyone but Southampton going up.
That was weird, wasn't it? Does anyone know any more? Like, sort of, the Sheffield Wednesday chairman, George, said that Darren Moore had asked for sort of 400% pay rise or something, which is quite a lot, isn't it? I mean, we'd all like it, but I don't know if you know any more.
Well, it's who you believe. I don't think it's in Darren Moore's personality to come out and write a long statement, replying to Mr. Chancery's claims. There was an amazing wrinkle to this. Was Carlton Palmer, who's obviously a mate of Darren Moore, decided to Google what is the average wage for a championship manager? And all of us know that in Google, if you make a typo, it's absolutely fine because it just carries on searching for whatever you want it to search. But Carlton Palmer went even further by screenshotting the results and keeping his typos in there. So you can see that what he's typed into the Google bar is complete gibberish. And then he's used that as his reason to say why Darren Moore should have kept his job. It's hard to say. I personally am of the opinion that if you are a manager and you get 96 points in a season, which is a club record, and you achieve your goal of winning promotion, you're probably in line for a pay rise. In Cisco Munoz, they brought in a manager who won a promotion with Watford, but it was a very different job where he replaced Vladimir Ivic, who was a very stony-faced, fairly negative manager who fell out with Troy Deeney, which I think at Watford at that time was basically spelt at the end straight away. And Munoz came in and his job was basically just to smile and put his arm around Deeney and make everyone feel good. But the problem he's got at Sheffield Wednesday is he replaces someone who was already very smiley in Darren Moore, and everyone already felt very good. So he needs to show a bit more than just being a good bloke. And, you know, even though they came close to getting a point, Wednesday looked very, very limited. They scored one goal, a good finish from a set piece. Lee Gregory getting to show off that he's had his teeth done over the summer with some unbelievably pearly whites. A late goal from Che Adams got the points for Saints, and they probably deserved it on the balance of play.
Yeah, I think we sort of Carlton Palmer probably typing quickly. It's written Widjat, so a J instead of an H in the what. Widjat Pho managers earn in the Chan Puon ship. But yeah, I mean, I still think you'd get a reasonable result from that. Watford smashing QPR. I love that you go into a season, Ben, with hope. And even if you don't have a lot of hope, you know, QPR, we know, is a bit of a mess. And like, it's not really working for Gareth Ainsworth. But for 33 seconds, you know, just go, oh, well, that's it then for this year. And then they were hammered all in the first half. Like by half time, you're sitting there going, what are we even doing?
Yeah, bit of a mood killer. I worry about Ainsworth and QPR a little bit. At the outset, I said, you know, I think they've struggled. They'd be right down there. And obviously the opening day defeat suggests certainly that will be the case. And it just feels like he's been there a little while now and nothing has really changed. The squad is thin. It's not good enough, I don't think. And I think everything he had at Wickham and everything that made Wickham so good is not really, we're not seeing any evidence of it at QPR. It was always going to be a shift and a change when they went for Ainsworth, obviously a former player there. Very popular, but it does feel a bit like he's already having to kind of plead with the fans to, you know, we'll get it right. And I just don't like the noise. I really want it to work, but the noises don't feel great to me already. And it's a bit of an ominous start for QPR, who have a lot of work to do before, what is it, the 2nd of September, if they're to have any chance.
Yeah, just on Ainsworth, I don't know if any of you caught his post-match interview, which went on social, and he gave like 3.5 minute rambling answers to a question of, you know, what's your assessment? And it was just this on and on and on. Like, he just talked himself into this little corridor. Before you know it, he's saying, oh, we might have seen the league winners. And, you know, we showed really positive signs. You lost 4-0. Like, you know, you're really spinning and trying to work the cogs really hard here. It was a bit worrying, actually. Just, you know, whenever you're in that situation where you ask a question and then, you know, you almost forget what your question was because you've just been bamboozled by all this line of stuff from the manager. But there really wasn't anything to it. And just the nature of it, you know, there wasn't really any control in what he was saying. I think he's got a lot of work to do, Gareth Ainsworth. But, you know, he probably deserves that opportunity because what he did at Wickham, with the support he had at Wickham, has shown he can do good things.
Problem he's got is the fixture list has not been kind to Gareth Ainsworth. You know, a trip to Watford on opening day. They've got an easier game on paper still away from home, but at Cardiff next Saturday. And then after that, it's Ipswich, Southampton, Middlesbrough, Sunderland. I mean, it's basically all teams who are expected to be in the top six or seven. And I interviewed Gareth at the EFL launch day on Wednesday, and he was positively bouncing about proving people wrong. It hasn't taken the best start. And, you know, I hope for his sake that he's still there after that Borough game, but it's going to be tough to amass the points necessary, I think.
You mentioned Ipswich there, George. Ben, what do you rate of their chances? A big win at Sunderland, that, isn't it, on the opening day?
I thought Sunderland were the better team from the bits I saw of it for a long period, certainly in the first half. Ipswich, I do think we'll do well, and I think they're more than comfortably stay up. I'm not sure how high I can see them going. I think they're... I don't know. I think them and Plymouth, obviously Plymouth beat Huddersfield. I think those both of those coming up are very well organised. They know the system, the players. There's a lot of sort of familiarity there, and I do like what they're doing. I think Ipswich could. I don't know. I think they're a little bit short of where they would need to be if they're going to be sort of around the playoffs. But they certainly have a lot of very good players. They spent a lot of money in League One. I don't think we should be sort of surprised that they've come up with a good team and a team that's better than just capable of staying up. Obviously, Kieran McKenna's a very exciting coach, still very sort of young in his managerial career. But I do think for Sunderland, there's actually a lot of really good signs as well. I suppose the question for them is as well, are they maybe going to be that's a little touch naive, as perhaps that was their sort of undoing last season when they lost to Luton. But I'd be optimistic about both Sunderland and Ipswich, to be honest. And amazing attendance as well. You know, opened, I think it's over 40,000 again there. Joe Bellingham, really impressing, which is really exciting for the league. And I do, yeah, I really like Tony Mowbray. Just after on the subject of time wasting, it just made me laugh because it sounded like he was sort of talking about, I don't know, I made a note of some of his comments and he said, said stuff like, what is going on? Surely it's got to calm down. What is happening in the world? And it just made me think, it's almost like he was talking about global warming, but it was in fact 13-minute stoppages. So
he was reading the lyrics to Where Is the Love by the Black Eyed Peas, which was a song written about far too much injury time. And we might as well cover that, George. Well, I mean, it's coming in, it's here now, and it's probably accurate. But like, there's just part of me that just doesn't want any, should never be more than less than three and never be more than six. That's how I like life to be. I don't need the ball in play. You know, when someone says the ball's only in play for 44 minutes, you're not getting your money's worth. I don't want any more. Like, that's enough. That's fine for me.
I think, I mean, I disagree where I think the fact that it wouldn't really matter what would happen in a game and you could basically always guarantee, unless there'd been a serious head injury, you were going to get 2 minutes in the first half and probably around four. Having said that, you and I think, were the only game in the whole of the England where when the board went up and it was 6 minutes, everyone was kind of surprised by how little time there was added on, given there'd been a head injury and about eight subs just before. But it's really difficult. I mean, I think the important thing to remember is that the whole point of this and the reason why we're seeing 13 minutes in some games, the rest of it, like, it's meant to serve as, first, it's meant to be a fair reflection of the amount of time the ball's in play, but it's also meant to serve as a deterrent to those who want to time waste and those who use, you know, little injuries here and there to buy more time in the game. And that has to be a good thing. You know, if you're a player, you would much rather be playing during the minutes of 80 to 85, 85 to 90 than you would 95 to 100, where it's going to get more nervy. So I think naturally, the more harshly they implement it, the, you know, by going by the letter, that should in itself see a change in the way that the behaviour of players. You know, we saw two yellow cards within 25 minutes in that opening night on Friday night for kicking the ball away. You know, Lee Gregory basically rolled the ball about 4 yards and he still got a yellow card. But then what Tony Mowbray got so annoyed about and what I got annoyed about as well on Friday night is how stupid it is to go, we're going to do this 100%, we're going to add 9 on, we're going to add 13 on. And then when it gets to 9 minutes or it gets to 30 minutes, the referee blows the whistle as if there wasn't any added on time within added time. Like, it just makes a mockery of the whole thing. Like, if you're going to do this, do it properly. As I said, I was one of those culprits who I had a train earmarked from Cambridge back to Finsbury Park and missed it because of the, you know, the longer time it takes. You're now not leaving football stadiums until 10 past five. But really, just, you know, I'm not really too fussed by that. I think at the end of the day, we want to stop time wasting, want to stop players looking to gain an advantage by doing that. And in time, this will be the way to do it. If we have to hurt for a bit, then maybe that's okay.
Yeah, Mark said, you know, with the amount of injury time being added, will the fourth official have to hold up the board again to show much extra injury time is being added to the injury time, Sani?
Well, just a deal in facts, to quote Rafa Benitez. The Sheffield Wednesday Southampton game, ball was in play for 69 minutes and 33 seconds. And only one championship game last season was in for over 66 minutes. So already it's kind of shown that you do get more football. And, you know, look at League Two, where the average number of minutes last season that the ball was actually in play was 48 minutes. You know, you're getting half a game. So, yeah, George is right. Hopefully over time, this will even itself out and players will realise you can't be faffing around and wasting time. And we're in this kind of weird phase where Tony Mowbray is wondering about what the purpose of life is. But eventually things will kind of calm down and we're just in that weird little shuffly period where everything has to change.
A word of warning as well. to those who weren't at a game on Saturday and who, like me, when they see the ball flying out of the stadium, take that time to check their phone, read their messages, see what the scores are elsewhere. Can't do that anymore because there's multiple. So I kept looking up, thinking, when's the throwing going to happen? It turned out the ball was on the other end of the pitch because they've now got the balls on the cones around the pitch. So, yeah, beware.
I do like the ball going out of a ground, though. I mean, at the Abbey, that can happen. I think my favourite moment of that game, George, which we'll obviously talk in great detail, I think your left back just, at one point, just kicked the ball about 200 yards in the air and then it hit yeah. someone else and went out for a throw-in. I was like, that's why I love League One. Anyway, Ben, is there anyone we haven't mentioned in the Championship whose fans will be particularly annoyed that we haven't mentioned them so far?
I mean, well, Stoke had a really good win, opening day win, 4-1 against Rotherham. An awful lot of change there. I think it's 11 new signings. My favourite of which, I don't actually think he played on the weekend, I don't think he's up to speed yet, is Wesley, the once Aston, only 4 years ago, record signing at Villa, 22 million, I think they cost him, or he cost them. Almost, that signing almost sums up the change. I mean, just, yeah, quite a radical change. I think Stoke for the last few years have spent quite a lot of money trying to get back up, hasn't worked, different managers, hasn't worked. Alex Neil, very good manager up until now, you know, hasn't really happened. So maybe this will be the season, and certainly with a 4-1 win to kick off, perhaps this could be it. But yeah, a lot of change for the back five with the new signing. So yeah, very different Stoke team this season.
Well, Blackburn Rovers actually had a really good showing against West Brom, winning 2-1. And Harry Leonard was the scorer, only 19 years old. He'd done really well in like Premier League 2. I actually tweeted at the time when he came and made his debut was against Huddersfield last season. It was 9 goals, 4 assists in 15 games. A lot of hope on him. Nearly scored in his debut. He did score his first ever goal. And when you think that Rovers have lost Ben Brereton-Diaz, Bradley Dax also gone, you know, they're really having to cut the cloth accordingly and tip to not do very well, actually showed pretty positive signs. And if they've got these young players who can do the business, then they might be a bit of a surprise. On the other hand, West Brom were fairly poor at times, giving away the second goal straight from the restart is not what Carlos Corberan wants. He got sent off as well in that. And, you know, in our WhatsApp chat, we were discussing a bit about why he didn't do the post-match interview. And I just thought he had a bit of a hissy fit, but that's also part of the new rules. So if you get sent off as a manager, you don't need to do your media stuff anymore, which, you know, if I think back to my run-ins with Harry Kewell at Oldham Athletic, waiting for 2 hours in the freezing cold, like, I'm pretty sure he would go out of his way to get sent off. So this is another thing that's going to end up happening, I'm sure.
With that, I just think it's interesting that they're not even allowed to do club media if you've been sent off, which I just, yeah, I mean, it's quite bold, I suppose, of the rule makers to decide that. I know, certainly, I'm not going to name any names, but I know there's a couple of suspects, I'm sure listeners can guess who, were not too enamoured with the rule changes and the lack of freedom of speech and stuff. So a bold choice by the decision makers to not allow even the internal club media to take place if you've been sent off.
Is this going to replace how, you know, we always speculate about players who want Christmas off?
Yeah.
And suddenly you'll see a manager be like, oh, he's got a party tonight, isn't he? He wants to get out of there.
Exactly. it's the next culture wars, isn't it? Freedom of speech is now extended to managers club doing club video. I always think managers don't want to talk to the really chirpy person on their own social media. Before we end the Championship, I went on to Plymouth, who... It was a great win, and their second goal from a lad called Mumble is like John Barnes at the Maracanã. It was brilliant. And also Millwall had a really good win, didn't they, George, at Middlesbrough?
Yeah, a massive win, and especially poignant one as well. John Berylson, their owner, tragically died over the summer, which was a big shock to everyone involved. A rare case of just a universally adored owner by everyone at the club and all fans as well. They had a pretty tricky assignment going to Borough on opening day, who, as we know, was so good under Michael Carrick last season, and they won 1-0 with a, you know, it was fitting that the goal came from a homegrown talent in Romain Essa, who turned 18 back in May, a brilliant finish into the top corner. And they were fully deserving of their win as well. It was, you know, they fell just short of the playoffs last season, but Gary Rowett is building something very special there. And I think it would have meant a lot to the travelling fans to go out to Borough and put in that performance and get a win and see a homegrown talent get the goal.
All right, that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll do leagues one and two.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Brought to you by Lexus. Some things do more than their stated functions, because exceptional things inspire you to do exceptional things. To this select list, we add the all-new Lexus GX. With its exceptional capability, you'll see possibilities you never knew existed, sending you far outside your comfort zone. But as much as the GX challenges you, it also spoils you. Its intuitive technology and luxurious features mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to it. The all-new Lexus GX.
Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. We're going on tour in November, 6 nights. We're doing London on the 13th of November, Bristol on the 14th, Ben.
Very exciting.
It's exciting. You were very excited when that news came out. Manchester on the 15th, then 2 nights in Dublin, our residency in Dublin on the 20th and the 21st, and Brighton on the 22nd. We're tweeting all about it, so you can get tickets that way. We had a really good idea for a video, which I thought everyone would just do anyway, but producer Joel thinks it'll be hard to twist the arms of some of the panelists, but the more that do it, the better. Guardian.com/FWTour23 is the website. League One. Now, producer Joel wrote, there seems to be a dearth of quality in League One this season. He is a Charlton fan, so I suppose he's allowed to say it. I guess, George, like three really good teams went up, didn't they? Ipswich, Plymouth and Sheffield Wednesday, and then Blackpool and Reading and Wigan, who are both in a bit of turmoil, came down. So it feels open as a division.
Yeah, and then even when you look at the four teams that came up from League Two, you know, Orient, Stevenage, Carlisle, Northampton, none of them will have major ambitions to kind of challenge again at the top end of League One. Whereas if you consider that maybe, or after an opening weekend, maybe not, but the likes of Wrexham, Notts County, Stockport, Salford, if these teams came up, Gillingham, Bradford, you know, they would anticipate that they'd want to push straight to the top of League One again. So I totally agree. Like, it's looks on paper to be a fairly moderate league. Derby and Bolton look to be the kind of outstanding couple of teams. Bolton, playoff semi-finalists last season. In Ian Everett, they've got a manager who's already won two promotions, and Bolton kind of progress year on year. Derby under Paul Warne, who normally, when he's rather a manager, wins this league for fun. And, you know, despite still working under some financial constraints imposed by the EFL, they still have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to what they're able to offer players in terms of wages and the like. So, it looks well set for a couple of sides who maybe, you know, in League One has generally been fairly predictable in recent seasons. I think this season we're going to have one or two teams we maybe didn't anticipate would necessarily be there who will challenge. Although Barnsley was one side that I was fairly negative about in all our pre-season content, and they won 7-0 on opening day. So what do I know?
Yeah, and that win, Sani, is so... I mean, I feel more for Port Vale fans, right? You know, just because it was so cold and wet. And in my mind, like, Barnsley away is always a 7-hour drive. It turns out it's only 1 hour 41 from Port Vale, if you presume that all football fans live at the home stadium, which is how we judge these things. So, but even still, that's such a sort of bleak way to open the season if you're a Port Vale fan.
Yeah, I can only imagine, especially this time of year, there'll be exiled fans who are back home for the summer, something you'll know all about, you know. And
absolutely,
they'll have done that. They'll have done an even bigger journey to lose 7-0. I guess with it being the opening day, you can kind of write it off as, oh, you know, the players are still gelling and Andy Crosby's got loads more to offer. But they did win only one of the final 11 last season as well, so not a good start at all for them. What one nice note though on the Barnsley side of things, Devante Cole got a hat trick, and the third goal, it like took a bit of a knock as it was trickling,
yes,
towards
lovely.
The line. And very, very generous of the player running in just to let it go. Like
Nicky
every
Cadden.
Player I'm going to think of. Nicky Cadden, right, yeah. Just letting it go. Maybe because it wasn't on his left foot, I don't know. But it was like a yard out. And he didn't go full David Nugent. So well done to him.
Yeah, it was a very rare example of complete selflessness. He like shepherded it. It was like he was just shepherding it out of play, wasn't it? Because there were some defenders coming in. He was like, no, this is just going to trickle in. Wigan winning at Derby. Ben. Is that a big surprise? I know Wigan have got this points deduction, but that doesn't mean they're not good. Are they likely to be challenging as well?
Well, yeah. With Wigan, I feel like it's just really hard to know what was coming, really. But that is a way to kick off. Really encouraging. I do quite like Sean Maloney. Showed a lot of calm last season when it was all, you know, lots of upheaval, obviously, the last few months. Even in the days before that game, they had players terminate their contracts over issues about not being paid previously. So lots to deal with there. But I would think that's to go away to Derby on the opening day and pick up a win, really encouraging. I think, you know, they still have some good players there, like a couple of the youngsters. But, you know, they have, you know, people like Will Keane. They've lost Jack Watmore as well. And, you know, I think they'll do well to mix. But I say that, I'm going to contradict myself in what you were saying with George earlier, because of how open it is, that kind of, I think the top two, I think there's probably four teams that go into the top two, Bolton, Charlton, Derby, maybe Portsmouth. But those playoff spots feel so open. So, you know, if they can, you know, shave off those -8 points, obviously they've already done three of those, -5 now. You know, why not, I suppose, if they can build some momentum. But I have to say, I think Sean Maloney's carried himself and carried the club really impressively in the last few months.
Ben picked out four then for the top two. I mean, would you go with that sort of Charlton and Portsmouth as well? Why will they be good or better than last year?
In Charlton's case, the recruitment has been very impressive. They've gone out and they've signed some kind of proven quality at League One level. Alfie May, who scored over 20 goals the last couple of seasons. Panuche Kamara, who when he's fit, which is, you know, question mark, because he basically missed all of last season. But when he's fit, I think he's the best centre midfielder in League One. Harry Eister, who had the second half of last season at Barnsley and did very well. Lloyd Jones, who's a decent centre-back, you'll know a fair bit about. You know, they've got just some proven quality for the level to add to what was already a decent squad as well. So and they've got a brilliant crop of academy players coming through too. Miles Leeburn, the pick of them, Carl Leeburn's son, who's currently injured till the end of September. With Pompey, I'm a little bit less sure. I think often people can mistake bringing in loads of new players for going for it. They've definitely had a massive churn of players. I think Rich Hughes, their director of football, is very, very sharp. And I have no doubt that under him that they will improve. But John Messino is a rookie manager. This is his first full season in charge. I'm not necessarily sure. I think they're recruiting to a budget rather than kind of going out and spending a lot of money to try and get themselves promoted. I think it looks like a fair League One squad. I'm sure they'll be in the mix, but I'm not necessarily seeing bags of quality there that will get them challenging towards the very top end of the table. So, it's really open. I was kind of confident in Ox's chances before Saturday. I still think kind of as time goes on, there's enough quality in there and a decent manager in Liam Manning that they could improve. I think the kind of obituaries around Peterborough are probably a little bit premature as well. They definitely do have some financial issues. Johnson Clark Harris is still at the club, but has been transfer listed and has had the captaincy taken off him, but they still have loads of top quality young players. Efren Mason Clark, who scored the goal against Reading on Saturday with a ridiculous header. It was like a Van Basten header from kind of the byline that looped over the keeper into the far corner. It wouldn't surprise me if they're there again.
One team I think might surprise would be Carlisle this season, because they've got Paul Simpson still there. Did a really good job getting them promoted last season. They've kept the core of the players. Owen Moxon, who you might remember, was the ex-UPS man who played really well in the playoff final, scored a brilliant free kick. And that was against the Fleetwood side. They drew 1-1 in the end. And I don't know, by the way, if there's ever been a club where the owner is in prison and that's the biggest issue around a club, because that's what's going on at Fleetwood Town.
What's he in prison for?
Was it fraud, isn't it? Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I'm thinking with my like BBC legal head on, but no, yes, it is fraud, and you can say that.
Yeah, you can if they're in prison. Yeah, I mean, I guess it feels like an issue. I don't know what the rules are on. You know, we've talked a lot about club ownership. Are you allowed to own a club if you're in prison? I mean, it's
well, no, really, because you'd fail the owner's fit and proper persons test, wouldn't you? He's already there.
Well, would you? Is the question. I never know. That's true. I always think they'd say, he's in prison now, you're still okay. Come on then, George. You went to the Abbey. And I just say, like, I haven't been for so long. And I know loads of our listeners live overseas and support teams. And they don't get to watch them every now and again. I hadn't been to the Abbey for so long. And like the nostalgia of just seeing the place, and it is basically the same. Like, it's been tarted up a little bit in places, but it is the same. And, you know, it's just a different set of people running around chasing a ball. But all the people are there. They're a bit older. It was so nostalgic. It was so nice to go. I suspect the result does colour everything, right? And to win 2-0 when I didn't have any expectations, because I never do, especially the second goal was a brilliant move. And I don't think I've seen us do that sort of very often in 40-odd years. From an Oxford point of view, that was pretty, was it flat? Like, you kept the ball a lot, you've got good players. And I said it on the radio, but if Josh McEachran's got a bald patch, then we're all getting up. Do you know what I mean? Because in my mind, he was still 15, but what did you make of it?
Yeah, our three midfielders at the moment are Josh McEachran, Marcus McGuane and Cameron Brannigan, who it feels like in a different universe could have been the England midfield trio given their youth careers. Yeah, it was disappointing. I'm kind of a believer that a good pre-season can often be a precursor for a really poor start. I think that often complacency can creep in. And after Oxford beat QPR 5-0 on the Saturday before the season started, the general feeling was that we were going to walk the league, I think, amongst certain fans. And yeah, it was a really flat start. Cambridge were by far the better side in the first half. You know, Ghassan Ahabmi is a striker who, you know, he's brilliant. He's so good. And I think it definitely was the correct call by the referee. But I think if you have a referee who is willing to let him be as physical as he wants to be, which that one did, then centre-backs can't really live with him, because he is right up in their face. He's so good in the air, runs a lot. You know, when he's at it like that, there will be other refs, I think, who'll call him out on it, and then it's going to be hard for him to be as effective. But, you know,
from my point of view, your centre backs were all over him, and he should have got a lot more.
Wow. So, that just shows that is football fandom in a nutshell.
It really is. It really is. And I'm not just saying that for effect. I was really like, come on, you've got to give him something.
You know, but I agree personally in that I think that's how a centre forward should be able to be physical against centre backs. So maybe it was the case that the ref just got it right and let them both kind of go at it with each other. I thought the second half, Oxford grew into the game more, but it's always easy to grow into a game when you're 2-0 down against a low block, because you just have a lot of the ball. Ruben Rodriguez is someone who, you know, got 18 goals and 14 assists last season for Notts County. I thought in the second half he showed Oxford fans that we've got quite a special player there. You know, he was able to unlock that low block a couple of times. But, you know, Cambridge with Michael Morrison and Ryan Bennett as centre-backs, you know, that's an experienced duo. I think at home, given the way that Cambridge have kind of, you know, we know it's a very small, narrow pitch, which helps the way the Mark Bonner likes to set the team up. I do worry that away from home, when the pitch is a bit bigger, maybe the lack of pace of those two might be exposed a little bit.
I mean, you make it sound like an alleyway there. I mean, it's like within the legal.
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, there is an alleyway behind the goal. it's the only stadium in the UK where teams can do their pre-match warm-up behind the goal, because there's like another little five-a-side pitch there, because they've pulled it forward so much. But
it's a strange design, that is true.
Yeah, well done. Enjoy your 3 points, Max.
Thanks very much. What's happening in Reading, Ben? Because they had a transfer embargo. Did it sort of stop for a week where they could get loads of players and then start again? Because they did bring some players in, or they're allowed to bring in released footballers.
Yeah, no. So they were under embargo for about 2 years, and then they had a, by Reading standards in the last few years, a really positive week. They regained their Category 1 academy status. They got their manager, Ruben Sellers, actually sort of rubber-stamped in the door after, I think it was sort of over 2 weeks of kind of, yeah, he is the manager, but not officially able to actually start work yet, which is just, you know, interesting. And then, crucially, they came out of embargo, only to then find themselves back in it for a period last week. As you say, in that in-between period, a sort of flurry of arrivals, Robbie Savage's son, Charlie, among others, Lewis Wing. And in Wing's case in particular, I think, you know, it's pretty good get in League One. And then the Reading owners and Reading as a club, who I have to say have been really, really silent for quite some time now, then took the step of releasing a statement last week saying that, oh no, we do actually, you know, quite fancy a bit of investment to help us out here, which was long overdue, really, from fans' side. I think it's really concerning there, the way that it seems like, and from a couple of people I've spoken to, that it seems like almost the owner, who it's a hard one, because he has spent loads of money, almost, well, somewhere around 250 million, but has absolutely nothing to show for it. But he is an absent owner, and the people who work there, I think he thinks he only will get involved when, you know, really, really needs to, when it, something really disastrous is about to happen, okay, suddenly, right, well, I'll come up with the funds, I'll make it happen, which is kind of what we've seen over the last few weeks in different instances. You know, just as people are kind of at boiling point, really, oh yeah, the money just arrived just in time, but it's no way to run a football club. It's certainly no way to go forward. I feel really sorry for some of the people behind the scenes there who are obviously trying to do really good work, but ultimately are, powerless, really. I really think it's going to be a season of struggle for them, to be honest, Max. I think in the way they've started, I mean, by all accounts, I think they played okay on the weekend, but I just think it's such a mess. And when I spoke to fans there a few weeks ago for a piece, you know, that one of the points made by one of the, I think it was the chair of the Supporters Trust, said, okay, well, this is fine and hopefully we'll get out of it, but then for how long? And I think that's kind of the overarching sense there is, okay, you know, we need a long-term solution. And at the moment, we're just getting little short-term kind of papering over the crack jobs.
Into League Two, phrases this. Can we please stop getting carried away about teams promoted from the Vanarama Bin League and then presuming that they'll automatically do really well in League Two? In reality, how they'll perform will be far more uncertain. And Capinosti says, will Wrexham ask to reshoot their game with MK Dons? How did MK Dons become the good guys? Yeah, Sonny, is it bad now that I was sort of quite pleased that Wrexham and also Notts County, who shouldn't be in this, you know, like, I don't know if they've got investment, they came up, but sort of quite pleased that they both lost.
Yeah, Wrexham in particular become every EFL fan's bogey team. You know, without biting the fan hand that feeds me, you know, Sky Sports News doing a lot on Wrexham, and you wonder, you know, would they be doing it on another League Two team? I won't say much more than that, but, you know, the thing about it is, though, right, and this is kind of my philosophical position, is yes, all this hype around Wrexham. Yes, they've got all this money and they brought in all these players and, you know, they signed Paul Mullin, who dropped down two divisions at the time to join them. And, you know, it was breaking news in the yellow ticker bar when he was injured on pre-season. But it is bringing a new set of fans to football, to lower league football, to something away from the hype, you know, away from the Premier League summer series and all that stuff. So from a general position of, I suppose it's quite good that there's that much investment in a football club in League Two. It can only be generally okay, better for the league to have that sort of spotlight. But yeah, they're everyone's team to beat now, and rightly so. You know, years gone by, I brought the drum as a Bury fan to Wrexham, told to shove it up my arse, you know, so I always have that in the back of my mind.
So hang on a second. You were the drummer?
Yes, I was drummer boy. For Bury.
Wow.
Yeah. I kind of decided I'd stop because you can't be doing it
sideways.
Approaching your first
yeah,
league.
Of course, sideways. Yeah, that's the.
yeah, it's not the thing to do when you work in radio, though. It really isn't good for your hearing. So that was one reason. That and being surrounded by like 14 year olds. There comes a point where you probably need to just, yeah, sidestep away from that very much so.
45-year-old man, I've still got this. Bang, everyone's yeah. going on. Who's that? He's not with us. Is that the right thing for? I think Sonny's right, isn't he, George? They've been great, you know, and they're nice people and they're doing great stuff for the community. And you're allowed to appreciate all of that and also find it funny when they lose on the opening day.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, the noise around Wrexham kind of takes away from the fact that it's great to have, you know, an EFL stalwart and a big club kind of revived. I don't really care very much about Wrexham's global fan base, but I do care about their local fan base, who've gone from having a team that was really down on its haunches to one that's now, you know, upwardly mobile and very ambitious. In terms of the first question, it's interesting because, you know, Wrexham were the favourites to win League Two before opening day. Last season, Stockport were the favourites. The season before that, Salford were the favourites. So you're seeing consistently that the team who, and Salford didn't even win National League, but when they came up, they were still favourites. And you see, this is generally the trend, but normally teams at the top of the National League do perform very well. You know, Stockport were the fourth place team last season. I think in some measures, in my mind at least, they're probably the best team in the league and were fairly unlucky not to win automatic promotion. Salford also playoff semi-finalists last season. Tranmere went back-to-back a couple of years ago. I got in big trouble for saying that Bristol Rovers were the last team to go back-to-back, and a lot of Tranmere fans were messaging saying, excuse me, especially because we had them 20th in our predictions. It wasn't a particularly good way to win them over. But yeah, I mean, there is a precedent in my mind that if you are a team coming up with the National League, it's very rare that you are going to struggle towards the bottom end. Hartlepool were the only ones where that really happened, and that was because Dave Challoner, their manager, left after taking them up. So, you know, I wouldn't. With Notts County, they had a man sent off after 15 minutes at Sutton. The fact that these two teams conceded 10 goals, I wouldn't be writing either Notts County or Wrexham off at this stage. I still think there's probably quite a big likelihood that at least one of them, probably both of them, will be involved at in the automatic promotion race at the end of the season.
Ben, I mean, I like the shit-housing Sutton centre-forward who just waved at the goalkeeper, the Notts County keeper, just kept waving at him as he was complaining about his red card. Who are your picks from Wrexham and Notts County aside? Who are your picks from League Two?
Yeah, I mean, I would say Stockport. And also I do think the Wrexham kind of mania, for want of a better phrase, is really good news for Stockport and even Notts County, to be honest, because I think both of those will really fancy their chances of winning promotion. I think Stockport have just kind of assembled their own kind of all-stars. I know Wrexham are the ones that get all of the noise and all of the traction, but, you know, Stockport have got a bit of financial muscle as well, and you know they've signed some really exciting players. Louis Barry's just joined on loan from Villa, who I suppose we've kind of been waiting to take off. I mean, if you remember, he got that move to Barcelona a few years ago. They've got Nick Powell, obviously, once of Manchester United. You know, there's a few, you know, very talented players around, and I think they went close last year. They'd be my pick, I think, to go up. And I think Wrexham dominating sort of the headline certainly I think it's quite helpful to Stockport, who, if Wrexham weren't in the division this year, I think a lot of the focus would have been on Stockport and their kind of financial approach.
I think the big question is going to be if Phil Parkinson's time at Wrexham, you know, if they don't make the good start and they look to make a change, who is going to be the new Wrexham manager? Because surely they're going to want someone who is marketable, whose profile will help their brand and the rest of it.
Ooh, you know, Allardyce.
Frank Lampard.
You think Lamps?
Could he be turning up at Megan Rapinoe? Why not?
Possible. You know, yeah, that's fascinating. Isn't
make
it?
The storylines.
Well, just to go back actually to Notts County, losing 5-1, not a great start for them. But Joe Kizzy for Sutton had one of the games of his life. 30 years old, played his entire career in non-league till he came up with Sutton. Scored one, set up another. And I know that 2 years ago, he was on trial or playing training with Alexandra Park, one of those like non-league teams when football went professional or stayed amateur. And Alexandra Park, Corinthians, both of those teams kind of stayed amateur. And Kizzy was training because my mate played.
They're in the Southern Amateur League, yeah, Ali Pally. Yeah, I've played on that hill.
So he was playing with them and he couldn't displace the player manager in that team, and he was farmed out to like different positions. And then my mate was like, "Have you heard this player called Joe Kizzy? We had him for a bit. I think he's gone to Sutton." Like, yeah, he's been at Sutton. He's been promoted. So you always look out for him and think, "There's a player who couldn't displace like this aging player manager centre half, and there he is now playing league football." There's probably loads of players like that out there. So Kizzy having the game of his life, 5-1.
Yeah, and a testament to his commitment to keep going, because that could be enough to go maybe I'll try something else. George, Crawley and Morecambe are both sort of in difficulties, I think. And we don't have hours to talk about them, and they're quite complex situations, I think, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, the Crawley one has been going on for a year or so now, with Wagme United buying them, the Crypto Bros, as they're called. And last season was a total and utter mess. The relationship between the owners and the fans is not good. The fan base kind of united in wanting them out. Scott Lindsay, the manager, came in at the back end of last season and got the results needed to keep them up. And he is very popular. They've shipped out a lot of their players that, you know, that the fan base would call their best players, and recruited a lot from non-league. But it started well with a 1-0 win over Bradford. Bradford down to 10 men around about halfway, but Crawley looked okay. So despite being favourites for relegation, there was kind of good news there. And also at Morecambe, where, you know, this is one of those where you've kind of got to be careful what you say, but they have had, you know, there was talk initially of Tyson Fury possibly buying the club. It ended up being Sabret Johal, who was the prospective owner. Some question marks on social media around the validity of his ownership bid. The takeover as of yet hasn't happened. And I think Morecambe kind of need to be bought at some point, it feels like. So uncertainty behind the scenes there as well, the extent of which we just don't know. It's all kind of hearsay. But a 2-1 win for them on their return to League Two. Big news with a late goal. Derek Adams is so important there. And I really think for his managerial career, like, it's going to be crucial that he sees his future at Morecambe, because if he walks away, especially with the issues off the pitch, I do fear that they could be returning back to non-league.
All right, that'll do for the EFL. We'll do a bit on the Community Shield next.
Brought to you by Lexus. Some things do more than their stated functions, because exceptional things inspire you to do exceptional things. To this select list, we add the all-new Lexus GX. With its exceptional capability, you'll see possibilities you never knew existed, sending you far outside your comfort zone. But as much as the GX challenges you, it also spoils you. Its intuitive technology and luxurious features mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to it. The all-new Lexus GX.
Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. We've got Premier League preview Wednesday and Thursday, so we're not going to do too much on Arsenal winning on penalties. Mark says, what's the percentage split of Arsenal celebrations between winning the Community Shield versus beating City and gaining that confidence? As an Arsenal fan, the latter means more personally. First time Arsenal have beaten Man City in 3 years. Do you think it makes any difference, Ben? I mean, I think it's fair enough. If you're at a game where there's a trophy on offer, you're allowed to celebrate, right? It's good. It's good for morale. But I don't think anyone really takes it seriously, do they?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I actually think, given the way last season kind of unravelled for Arsenal, and obviously the fact it was City who were ahead of them and went on to win it, I think it was quite a big result. Just in terms of what it does for Arsenal, sort of mentally and all of that kind of stuff. All of the stuff that now this week and in preparation for the Premier League, I think it's quite, you know, it's helpful for that. I think it'll just give them that little boost. Obviously, new players in the building. I think for Arteta, it's good. I think for Arsenal, it's a really valuable win. Obviously, the trophy is kind of just the sideshow, really. And I think obviously for the fans there, had a great day. I heard somebody say, you know, for Man City, it was just like, you know, another trip to Wembley. For Arsenal, it just felt a bit more special, if that's the right word, more generally. But I actually think in winning it, beating City, regardless of how they did it, I think it's potentially quite a powerful tool. I have to say, I wasn't sure about Arsenal this season in terms of sort of competing and going close again. But I think Rice is obviously a very good signing. I still think they'll struggle to sort of overthrow City. But I think for Arsenal, it's a really good start. And when I look at the sort of contenders for the title, I'm struggling to see anyone probably beyond City and Arsenal again, really. I think maybe Liverpool, but I can't see United in the current sort of guise. So, yeah, for Arsenal, really good start.
Sani, I mean, I guess it is. But then, you know, it's one massively deflected shot away from just being, oh, City won this again. I mean, like, results dictate the narrative, I guess, and winning the penalty shootout does give you that confidence.
Yeah, and Darren Ramsdale talked about a mental block going by winning this game. But yeah, it is just the Community Shield. And, you know, I try not to engage with it too much, actually, funnily enough, because it is
on an ethical level.
Well, kind of, just because it's, you know, it is just a meaningless friendly. And this time last year, everyone was going, oh, Erling Haaland didn't perform well, you know. Will he actually do the business? And, you know, clearly, yes, was the answer there, resoundingly so. But then I saw, you know, the opening goal from Man City, from Palmer, was brilliant. And, you know, he's a player who's really kind of knocking on the door, trying to get involved in that side. You know, Arsenal, the way they managed to come back, yes, in the final, whatever, 111th minute or something, and winning on penalties, yeah. I think for them, with the way the season fell apart last season, it meant a lot more than the usual. And yeah, for City, they didn't really care. I know fans had actually organised a boycott around the game because of its kickoff time, and had asked supporters to instead donate to the Man City Food Bank. And I know they've raised like £10,000, which covered the entire summer window of food when they weren't collecting, because there was obviously no matches played there. So there's that wider issue around, you know, why have this game, where to have it and when to have it. But it means a lot to Arsenal, not really much to City. And yeah, for Arsenal, they're kind of putting a lot of stock in this. And I guess after last season, fair play to them.
Aaron Ramsdale, a different Aaron, wrote in his excellent Players Tribune piece that he always listens to football podcasts in the car. Question is, how much of his success does he owe to Barry? And could owe it to you, George. Could be a not the top 20 listener, couldn't he?
But hope so.
That piece, and I, you know, I don't know if you've all read it, but it was amazingly open, talking about his you know, brother coming out and how he will deal with homophobia, talking about his partner having a miscarriage, which is, you know, it happens a lot in life and people don't ever talk about that. And it's a sort of stigma surrounding that. And actually he talked about Arteta, George, in a way that really, you know, shows that this guy is not just a good tactician, but is excellent at working with young men, sort of trying to find their way in life.
Yeah, I thought the whole piece was really important. In an age where the levels of media training within football, especially at that level, means you rarely get much of an insight into who the person is. And I think that is, frankly, fairly negative, because I think that means that when you get fans abusing players on the pitch and stuff, it's because they don't really feel any personal connection towards them. If you compare it to how football was kind of 20 or 30 years ago, where, you know, even though there was the culture of celebrity, there was certainly a more human aspect to the you know, the flaws and the rest of things were more laid bare. I also think for Ramsdale to use his platform in order to drive inclusivity, to help the ridiculous situation within football that we still have around the lack of you know, representation of the LGBT community within men's football is, you know, is something that needs to be remedied in time. And I think for Ramsdale to use his platform in order to promote the inclusivity is massive. So all credit to him. And, you know, it's good to know that a guy who's going to be wearing an England shirt for the next 10 years and we're going to see on our screens is someone that we can all root for, really.
George is spot on there about characters. And just to go off on a slight tangent, Eddie Hearn was interviewed during the Ashes and TMS during one of the breaks for lunch, talking about the characters in boxing and the characters in darts and how cricket is missing that, and you don't really hear anything about what players are like. And the same applies to football. Like, like you say, George, we don't know anything about these players and we haven't got that connection. And it's the sport and the noise that it sustains it. You know, it's a great product anyway, is football. But if we heard more from these players, it'd be even better. You know, it'd be so much better if we can just get away from this media-trained world. For Ramsdale to come out and do that, especially when you think in the wider context of what Jordan Henderson's previously said, and now he's gone to Saudi Arabia, you know, fair play to him. For some, a minority will use as a stick to beat him with at any point, but, you know, the fact he's been brave enough to do that. We need more players doing that, because there's actually loads of funny, interesting people in football. We just don't hear from them.
Matthew says, on a slightly different note, I think the Community Shield is the worst-looking trophy in English football. Any advances on that? So look, okay, we can break it down. The Premier League trophy is okay. The Championship trophy, the old Division 1 trophy, is beautiful. The FA Cup is timeless. The League Cup is a bit shit. The UEFA Cup is absolutely beautiful. And the Champions League trophy is...
The EFL trophy is horrific.
Oh, is it changed?
It's massive. It's absolutely huge.
It's like a huge kind of vase.
Oh, is that the EFL trophy as in the JPT LDV Vans thing?
Right. Yeah.
What does that look like? Let me have a look at that. It's a bit like a budget UEFA Cup.
One of my favourite trophies was one pre-season. I think Villa won it a few years ago, and it was a player bursting out of a football.
Oh, okay.
Do you remember that one?
Right.
It was something else epic. Like massive, like you'd need a whole trophy cabinet just to store it.
Yeah,
these pre-season trophies, I think that's where the real money's at.
It's the Stanley Cup is absolutely enormous. I mean, it's not an area of my expertise, but the Stanley Cup trophy.
NASCAR, doesn't that have a massive one? IndyCar?
Yes,
Stanley 500.
The Stanley Cup is like they put all the winners, so it's like plinth on plinth on plinth on plinth on plinth. Like it just never ends. They just keep adding more bits. I presume they keep adding bits to the bottom of it, but yeah, absolutely enormous.
Like a Jenga.
Yeah, sort of like Jenga, but they don't play sort of pull the plinths off sort of very like, just after
tricky.
You've won with your ice hockey gloves on. Would be tricky. Feel like we've done enough today. Thanks everybody. Enjoyed that. Thanks for your time, Sani. Oh, hang on, before we leave, just before the pod, Sani, you said you used to live next door to who?
Bernard Manning.
Bernard Manning.
Notorious racist comedian.
What was he like as a name? Was it, you know, was he actually like really charming in real life? Like, what? Or was he equally vulgar?
No, he was lovely actually. So, you know, I'd kick the ball over, I'd knock on, he'd be there in the string vest, Rabsy Nesbitt style, come in, get your ball. And, you know, there'd be ashtrays everywhere. I'd get my ball, and he'd always give me something random. One time it was like 4 litres of Pepsi Max. Another time it was a massive jar of pickled onions. And then one time he just gave me like a CD of him covering Rat Pack songs, just like him doing Sinatra and stuff.
4 litres of Pepsi Mix seems a lot, doesn't it? For how old were you at the time?
Would have been, yeah, 8 or 9. He lived next to us till he sadly passed away. But he was a lovely neighbour. He got on well with my old man. But then he also wrote us into a stand-up routine involving my man then being kicked into bollocks. So, yeah, right. That probably wasn't the nicest way to end that.
Was Pepsi Max sugar-free? I'm trying to think just how buzzing you'd be after 4 litres of that. Anyway, you know, that's an interesting tidbit. You were there at the death of Bernard Manning. I don't know how long we should talk about this. Thanks so much for coming on. Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Max.
Thank you, Sani.
Pleasure.
Cheers, George.
Thank you, Max.
Good luck in the return game, George. That's some bragging for you. Yeah, you probably won't. We'll have a Premier League preview on Wednesday and Thursday. Football Weekly is produced by Joel Grove. Our executive producer is Danielle Stevens.
This is The Guardian.